Geekville Radio.
Boy, you know, after all this time, a couple years with this new theme music, and I still bop my head every time it comes on, but hello, ladies and gentlemen, geeks and geekettes, this is Seth, a.k.a. Xandrax, the mayor of Geekville and the host of Geekville Radio. We're going to kind of piggyback this off our last week's episode, where we did a lot of talk on comics. We're going to talk Star Wars High Republic. We're going to talk some C2E2 coverage, a lot of it DC, some Marvel. We got some stuff coming from Jim Lee, which again kind of piggybacks off what we were talking last week about the 5G revival. And we'll wind it up with some Marvel talk on the Marvel Empire and what they're calling their next big thing. And once again, I don't have to do it alone. Join me once again from the nice soft padded cell in the asylum in South Kakalaki, Crazy Train Jonathan Bullock.
All aboard, ladies and gentlemen. That song makes me want to play Mega Man or Contra, but that's just me.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I never had a Super NES. I had a Sega Genesis, so the Sonic songs are the songs, but it still has that same vibe.
Or as somebody who did have the Super Nintendo, maybe like the F-Zero or something like that, the original F-Zero.
Yes. But I don't know why, just Mega Man's always the game that pops in my head when I hear that song.
Yeah, absolutely fits with that. So, like we said, we're going to kick this off with what we didn't really delve into it last week. It had just hit right about the time we recorded, and that's Star Wars High Republic. And really, in a nutshell, this had been teased for a while. There was a different project being dubbed, but it looks like it is reintroduction of what we called the expanded universe or extended universe, the EU, whatever. It's only instead of it covering thousands of years, it is going to mainly be set about 200 years before the films. Of course, my knee-jerk reaction with my attempts at literal humor and just the way my brain's wired, when I heard Star Wars High Republic, it's like, okay, well, that implies there's a low republic and maybe a medium republic at some point. So,
yeah.
Now, you didn't read much of the books back in the day, right?
A few of the comics, Splinter of the Mind's Eye, some of the Prince Ezor stuff, which I thought was good. But yeah, not as much as you did.
You knew enough that Chewie got a moon dropped on him, and you know that was about it, right?
Yep. Why you got to bring up a sore spot like that?
Yep.
But once again, I mean, you know my love of Chewie. That's how badass Chewie was. It took a whole freaking moon to take him out, but you know.
Absolutely. It's one of the things, and I don't really want to get into a Star Wars debate. We both liked Rise of Skywalker, so we won't be debating with each other. But it's like I was hearing the people complain that the Star Wars EU was getting ignored by the new movies. And then they're complaining that Palpatine was brought back. And it's just like, it's almost exactly the description of what happened in the Dark Empire comic. So, you know.
Well, but back to your idea of a high, middle, low. Maybe this is meant to, it's going to sound weird, but be the middle. I mean, we already have what we call the Old Republic era, like from the video games and the books. And we see, you know, the original trilogy and the prequels being the downfall, or I guess the low republic, if you want to use that term. So
right.
Maybe this is because if it's 200 years before Phantom Menace, that would fall in between the Old Republic and the events of the movie. You follow up my logic there?
Right. Because in the traditional EU lore, and what I think does hold up and what people like Rebel Force Radio would call G-level canon, G for George, is that the Republic was around for 1,000 years. I think Palpatine even says it in episode 2, that we've been around for 1,000 years, and it was the fall of the Sith Empire that led to the old Republic. So you'll even hear Tarkin in the original Star Wars, A New Hope. He talks about the last remnants of the old Republic have been swept away, but I think he kind of uses the term old as like, oh, that's the old regime. We're the new one now.
Well, and if you look at, once again, we've talked about this many times when we talked Star Wars, George Lucas tends to borrow, by his own admission, his knowledge of real history and events that have happened and apply them to this when it comes to like the politics and the social ideologies of the Star Wars universe. Most grand, what we can think of as grand governing bodies, empires, whatever you want to name them, they usually are at their height right in the middle of their life cycle. That's right. When they're at their great. They've expanded the most. They have the biggest reach of influence. Everything's going right. Whether you're talking the Roman Empire, the Greek Empire, the British Empire, you know, the feudal days of Japan, the some of the dynasties that existed in China. The same with the Maharajas in India. No matter where you go in the world and our own history, that is the height of most civilizations, is right in the middle. Just kind of like human beings, right? We're at our peak at a certain age, and then we start to age, and we go downhill from there. So maybe that's what it's meant to be. Maybe that's why they chose the term High Republic, because that was when it was at the height of its greatness. I don't know.
Yeah, I think that's the figurative of what they meant, that it was when things were great. Like what some people might look at as being like
the Golden Age.
Yeah, Golden Age, or the classic era of chivalry and stuff like that. But, you know, me just being a constant puns in my head that I don't even blurt out on the air because we'd be here all night.
So I'm thinking, you know, High Republic, if we're bright in that, then it's like the height of the Jedi Council.
Exactly.
Kind of thing. I would guess Yoda would still be on the Jedi Council even 200 years before Phantom Menace, wouldn't you think?
I would think so, because this wouldn't be old Yoda. This would be like middle-aged Yoda. I would assume.
Right. We know he was getting old and getting ready to die by the time we get to Empire and Return of the Jedi. But he was still fairly spry in Empire Strikes Back for as old as he was.
And even, obviously, in Attack of the Clones Episode 2, he has the fight with Dooku, and then he's jumping around in the Senate when he's fighting Palpatine.
Yeah, as a wrestling guy, you'll appreciate my description of that fight to those that hadn't seen it yet. When those weekend, it's Rey Mysterio as a Jedi. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, pretty good analogy. So I'll definitely check it out, because it looks like Disney and Lucasfilm, they're going to take their time and give people their own corners, which I don't think they really did at first, going back to the early 90s when we were getting stuff like Heir to the Empire, which had Grand Admiral Thrawn as the head of the Empire. But yet, at the same time, we're getting the Dark Empire comic where they brought Palpatine back from the dead. And it's like, okay, where does this come out? And then they later said that Dark Empire was after those Zahn books. But now they're kind of working out the canon, I think, beforehand. So the authors are knowing where their story is going to take place.
And this is only going to be in the written medium. We're not going to get this in comics or video games or animated movies then.
I think we're probably going to get comics. I think sooner or later, that's probably just going to be the headline of it, is it'll say, because if you look in the comics now, I think it's Age of Republic is the prequel era. So it's Age of Republic, Age of Rebellion, Age of Resistance, and they'll probably just have High Republic being this.
So era. We can just completely ignore AYE and BYE now.
Probably. I mean, I don't think those are ever truly going to go away, because when you get any book like the making of whatever movie, they tend to center the before and after around when it takes place in that book, which kind of ruffled some feathers, which I can understand. But
would you explain those to the few listeners we have that don't know what those are?
Yeah, the ABY and BBY, it has the Battle of Yavin. And I'm glad you actually mentioned this train, because I don't think I ever told listeners that we're going to do this. I may have told you off mic, but the Star Wars saga in most forms of print centers around the Battle of Yavin as being the focal point of when things happened. The way to kind of look at it is the way our years are, where it's BC and AD, you know, centered around.
And if you're a little more politically correct, it would be, what is it they call it now? Common Era.
Common Era, yeah.
BCE, because AD and BC are definitely Christian, and there are other calendars out there. So that's kind of what we go with now, because it's a little more politically correct. But it's the same thing. It's still only two divisions.
I side with Neil deGrasse Tyson on that one. Keep the BC and the AD, but that's just me.
That's coming from an atheist, too. Yes. Scientist. There you go.
in this case, though, the BC and the AD would be the Battle of Yavin in the original Star Wars, a.k.a. A New Hope. So the reason I bring that up is about, I'm glad you mentioned this, because I've actually been working on a timeline where A New Hope came out in 1977. What if we put the real dates on these? So I'm having like the birth, the death, and the events of characters in a timeline in a real world analogy. So you have, you know, 1895, the birth of Qui-Gon Jinn, you know, stuff like that. I want to say it means Luke and Leia were born in like 1958 or something like that. you know, just
I can see that. Qui-Gon strikes me as he could have been the kind of guy that fought World War One, a little bit of existential after the events of that. I've seen
Right, exactly. Like real world. and that goes without even getting into Qui-Gon looking like the guy the other Jedi would go to for their weed. But that's just
and then I get Luke and Leia. I mean, Luke seems like he was raised by Owen and Beru, who seem to be children of the Depression. This is all making sense.
Exactly. So anyway, but that's what we mean when we talk about this timeline. So this would be happening, putting it in those timelines, meaning the Star Wars timeline. This would put it at about 230 years BBY, in other words, before the original film, 30 years before Phantom Menace.
So by using your concept of trying to put it in real world times, it would be about the time Europeans started settling the United States, colonization.
Yeah, exactly. So I'll at least check it out. I'm sure we're going to get comics. I don't know about video games, but it's definitely going to be novels. They haven't really released anything about what movies are going to be. Allegedly, they're talking about a Knights of the Old Republic video game.
I've heard that rumor forever, haven't you?
I'll believe it when it happens. We already got the video games, but you know, as far as a movie, I'll believe it when it happens.
And that's the one you do want Paul Blackthorne cast in, even though he does have a role in Battlefront.
Right. Oh, Paul Blackthorne could probably be like anything. He could play multiple roles. Just say it's a different generation for the same character.
Hey, it's worked in other things. Why not, right?
Absolutely. So that's going to tie up the Star Wars discussion here. We're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to dive into C2E2, talk a lot of DC and Marvel. This is Geekville Radio, and we will be right back.
Are you looking for a gaming-themed podcast? Then check out You Just Got Fragged. Join host Jared Aubrey and his panel of gaming enthusiasts as they discuss news and accomplishments in the gaming world, and of course, the gripe of the week. That's all at YouJustGotFragged.com. Part of the Wrestling Brethren podcast family.
All right, we're back talking C2E2. And like I said at the top of the show, this is going to kind of piggyback off what we discussed last week about DC and the 5G rumors. And we speculated, could there be a Marvel buyout? We definitely think there's probably going to be some sort of in-continuity meeting between the universes. But one of the top things that I attended at C2E2 was a Jim Lee panel. And of course, Jim Lee, not only is he a legendary artist in his own right, but he's now the publisher for DC after Dan Didio quit or got fired, depending on who you listen to.
Which rumor you listen to, yeah.
Right. And he said that DC is not going anywhere. We've been around for 85 years. We're going to be around for 85 more. And basically just kind of said that it was to address the rumors. Now, to be fair, nobody at the panel, nobody in the Q&A actually brought up any Marvel rumors, but I just kind of assumed he was saying that as kind of his blanket statement, like, you know, don't ask about a Marvel buyout or something like that. That was my interpretation.
I think we're not the only ones, but we're one of all the different podcasts and YouTube channels and website posts about that particular topic. We were in the minority, but we were not the only ones who speculated on the concept of Marvel buying them out, because we were doing some speculation at that point. I do think everybody who's talked about it, including ourselves, will call the rumor that maybe the publication side of DC gets closed down. But he didn't specifically say that. And we even said, we don't think DC would go away. They might shut down the publishing arm, but they're not going to give up those rights, at least not cheaply.
Right.
We're not going to lose Superman and Batman and Wonder Woman all of a sudden. They're too valuable properties for somebody not to snatch them up, or for AT&T, Warner Brothers to continue to sell rights and merchandising on them. I'm just thinking about how politicians speak, and I know Jim Lee's not a politician, but you understand what I'm talking about, double speak, you know,
right,
avoiding
exactly.
things. You know, so if he ever gets questions, so let's say, you know, worst case scenario, DC does close down the publication arm. If somebody wants to come back to Jim Lee and quote him on what he said at this panel you were at there at C2E2, he can go, I never said DC publishing wasn't going away. I just said DC wasn't going away.
Right.
And then he's got him. Plausible deniability, I think, is what politicians call that, right?
Exactly. And he even brought it up because there were people asking him about, I think it was about certain characters and this and that. And he kind of prefaced that saying, I'm going to try to use my words wisely, because otherwise there are going to be the headlines tomorrow. Jim Lee speaks out about that. Right. You know, and of course, there were some of the headlines out there that says Jim Lee addresses Marvel rumors, even though I was there. Nobody mentioned Marvel.
Marvel didn't come up once.
Right. Other than, hey, I worked for Marvel and I drew X-Men.
Right.
But his job is the chief creative officer. So he actually does keep in touch with people in the TV and movie division of Warner Brothers. So, you know, I think it's safe to say he's got a better idea of what's going on than what you might hear on the internet and such. I'm not saying we believe every word he says or anything like that. I mean, first off, he's a human being. Everybody's going to make mistakes. And like you said, some of this stuff could be public statements that could have layered meanings.
Another aspect you need to consider, too, is he's only basing this on what the discussions he's had with his higher ups. They could be lying to him.
Right.
So, I mean, if some bigwig at AT&T just shows up one day at the offices of D.C. and says, all right, guys, you got 2 weeks for shutting down the publication arm, he could be as shocked as everybody else. You know what I'm saying? Right.
We've all heard the horror stories of corporate decisions being made like that.
Oh, yeah. I have an uncle that happened to work for the Burger King Corporation. They got bought out by a British conglomerate in the 80s. They sent somebody over on a Monday or on a Tuesday and told them they had till Friday to get their offices cleaned out. All these mid-level and upper-level managers. So, yeah. I give you a real-world scenario. It happens, you know. Right. There's a reason why they called it Black Tuesday, because that guy showed up on a Tuesday and boom, they're all out of jobs.
Now, there have been rumors about 5G, and I think we talked about a little bit that it was going to be the next generation. And again, this isn't happening for a while, so maybe it's something that could be changed. But the rumor, and I hope this is one of those where it's just a rumor, but it was that all the current generations of heroes, as in the characters, would be killed off and replaced with new characters. In other words, they're going to kill Bruce Wayne, they're going to kill Diana, kill Barry Allen and all that. If that's true, I don't see Jim Lee standing for something like that. Maybe if it's some alternate multiverse universe or something like that, I don't want to speak for him. But as far as the mainstream, what we would call Earth One or Earth Prime, I don't think that would ever happen. And how anybody would think it's a good idea, that would be beyond me.
Well, there's two thoughts I have on that. First off, I want to correct something I said last podcast. My understanding was like that they were going to go that route, that Superman was going to be Jonathan Kent, Batman was going to be Lucius Fox. When I say Jonathan Kent, I mean Jonathan Kent Jr., the son of Lois and Clark. Okay. Which, if you've read the current Superman, they're kind of already setting up for him to be the new Superman. So that wouldn't be that big a shock. Right. It's not Lucius Fox. It's Luke Fox, which if you follow the current Batman, Luke Fox, and he's even been in one of the recent animated movies. Luke Fox is the son of Lucius Fox, who figures out who Batman is and that his father works for him. And he is currently Batwing in the comic books, which they're not really setting him up because Batwing and Batman don't really interact a lot in the comics. He kind of has his little part of Gotham that he helps. I mean, if you know Batman, you know, he has the Bat family, you know, all the different.
Right. Right.
And he's one of those. But Batman, if you read the comics, fairly well trusts all of his. I mean, first off, it's hard to get Bruce's trust to begin with. You know?
That's exactly what I was going to say, yes.
So once he's giving you the thumbs up to, yeah, you can fight crime in my city, he's not going to laud over you a whole lot because he trusts you implicitly. You know, now he's going to keep tabs on you. He's Batman, right? Don't get me wrong. But
he'll already have his contingency plan on how to take you down if he doesn't.
Yeah, or correct you. Exactly. Ask Huntress. She fell into that category, but I digress. I also know they kind of already did that with Rebirth. Remember the Jim Gordon version of Batman for a little while?
Mm-hmm.
My other thing is, why would you do that? Because you've already kind of done it and it didn't work. And I wonder, as we always like to bring up here, death in comic books is a fantasy. No one's truly dead, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And we're talking about the DC universe where Lazarus Pits exist, you know? It's a major part of like the mythology and lore of the DC universe is Lazarus Pits. So if they do go that route, I don't think it means that we won't see the return of the original heroes at some point. Like the way they got rid of Nightwing, Batman, and Robin in the Rebirth storyline was it was right after coming out of the RIP Batman and the Battle of the Cowl storylines where Bruce gets zapped into the past when he takes one of Darkseid's Omega Blasts head on. And he, you know, Bruce fights his way through time to get back to the correct time, which was a really fascinating stories, by the way, like a pirate Batman. Do I need to say more? That was an awesome story. But anyway, you know, when Bruce gets back, he realizes he needs to refocus, and he's only been the trainers of Tim Drake and Dick Grayson. They need the same benefits he has. So he takes them on this worldwide adventure where they are being trained by all those who trained him. And that's the explanation in the comic storylines is why there's no Bruce, no Dick, and no Tim. So there's no Robin, there's no Nightwing, there's no Bat for an extended period of time. But they do come back, you know? So, you know, if they go that route, I'm not going to be a big fan of it, but doesn't mean that you're not going to see Clark Kent and Bruce Wayne and Diana Prince come back as who we all know and love them to be. I think you can follow my logic there.
Absolutely. And it goes kind of with that talk of nobody stays dead in comics. It's like nothing stays the same. And just about every change is eventually undone in comics.
Right.
Perfect example being the symbiote suit for Spider-Man. It eventually became Venom. Spidey went back to his classic look.
Right. I think what you and me have finally declared on that after touting that for years on the podcast, the only people who stay dead in comics are the characters that need to stay dead because it's important for the character. Like
Uncle Ben.
Mm-hmm. Uncle Ben or Matt Murdock's father or Thomas and Martha Wayne. Or, I mean, heck,
Krypton.
Krypton. And as we said, even Krypton to a certain level, if you understand Brainiac, isn't completely dead, you know. But I think other than that, you're coming back. Mm-hmm. Nobody stays dead in comics unless it's integral for that. And heck, you could even say Martha and Thomas are alive. If you look at that, you know, the alternate universe where Thomas becomes Batman and a drunk and Martha becomes the Joker because Bruce is the one that gets killed. So, yeah, I guess it's all how you look at it. It's like, you know, as Obi-Wan would say, from a certain point of view, right?
Right, right. Absolutely. Now, since we're talking about Batman, there is definitely a kerfluffle that has overtaken the internet. And I think I can understand why, but I also think it's kind of cool. Because we didn't really talk about this that much, but I'll give the link to the tweet from Matt Reeves in the show notes at geekvilleradio.com/256. And that's the new Batmobile. I mean, when I saw it, at least the one that was that front view, first off, I thought maybe I was seeing a poster for another Fast and Furious movie. But then once I realized that it was Batman, it's like, well, that looks like it could be a Mustang or maybe a Challenger. And of course, the story is in The Batman, as it's going to be called. This is Bruce about a year or two into being Batman. So he might not have accrued the coolest stuff yet. And for me, when it comes to Batmobiles, as much as I love that classic Lincoln that was used in the 66 Batman, and I think it worked for its time, I always thought it was hilarious in these truly bizarre Batmobile concoctions that are coming up with. The guy that's supposed to be the world's greatest detective and can slip into the night undetected has this really unmistakable, one-of-a-kind car with a lot of flashing lights.
Or a tank.
Right, right. You know,
depending on like the Tumbler and the Dark Knight stuff.
Right, right. So in the clips that I'd seen online behind the making of where Batman's riding a fairly contemporary-looking motorcycle or having a fairly contemporary-looking car for the Batmobile, I think that makes sense. And now to me, like I said, it looked like a Mustang or a Challenger or something like that. I don't know if you had any thoughts on what you thought the car looked like.
Yeah, I was thinking, you know, Challenger, Charger, maybe even a little bit of a GTO, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Definitely that 70s muscle car look. We know that it's supposed to be early in Batman's career, but early in which Batman's career? Are we supposed to believe that this is the Ben Affleck version of Batman? And if that's the case, then that's the modern Batman, and this is early in his career. I would say it was 20, 25 years ago. That would put it in the late 80s, early 90s.
Yeah, it seems like it would make sense, especially given the age difference between Pattinson and Affleck. I mean, I know Pattinson's probably, what, early 30s by now, I think?
Late 20s, early 30s. And I would say Ben's late 40s, early 50s. So, I mean, he's legitimately old enough to be Robert Pattinson's father, but mm-hmm. it would have been him and he had kids at a young age. That's all, you know?
Right, right.
But I think, you know, we did talk about the bat suit last episode and the reveal for this. We have got to see some better pictures of the bat suit in this without all that weird red backlighting. It looks pretty good to me from what I've seen. What do you think now?
Yeah. The thing that I chuckle at, and I get that there are exotic cars that do this, but it looks like you got kind of that hood scoop or grill look in the front, but yet clearly the engine's in the back. So,
oh yeah, did you get a look at the close up of the engine?
Yeah, it looked like it was like a V8, 12. Maybe a V12. Yeah,
I was like, that looks like a V12. That doesn't even look like a V8. But once again, you're right. I think maybe Batman doesn't have the coolest toys yet, but no matter what era you're talking about of Batman, even if it's right as he's putting on the cowl for the first time, he's still going to have pretty advanced tech for whatever time period you're talking about, because it's Bruce Wayne and he's got the Wayne Foundation, or the Wayne Industries, I should say.
Yeah, Foundations, Wayne Tech.
Wayne Tech is their R&D. Wayne Industries is the conglomerate as a whole, and Wayne Foundation is their charitable arm. We have to delineate all that. I'm sorry.
But yeah, I didn't really see personally anything that I disliked about it. I really think what they may have been going for is if the classic Batmobile were to be in an updated, or at least in the last decade or two, setting, meaning they probably took what might have worked for a cool muscle car look and just chose a more contemporary model of car to do it with.
Yeah, I think if you're looking for a comparison within the comics itself, I would say this most resembles, body-wise at least, probably the Batmobile of the old 70s cartoons, the Super Friends, mixed with a lot of the Denny O'Neill, Neil Adams run in the 70s in the comics.
Right.
Which is, like I said, an old 70s, early 80s American muscle car, which to me is just a classic body type. Long, angry, and mean. That's what it is.
Now, the DC Universe panel that took place, this was specifically to the DC Universe streaming service, which I know you subscribe to. I'll probably get it sooner or later, but I recently signed up for Marvel's.
It's less than $10 a month. You know, I think I only pay like $7 or $8 every month. It's not bad.
Yeah, and it was mainly about new series that were going to debut. And one of them, at first I thought it was going to be a series, but what I think it's going to be is an online digital comic, because it was credited Jimmy Palmiotti and Amanda Connor, and it's called Ask Dr. Harley Quinn. And the gist of it is it's going to be fan-submitted questions. So it's basically Harley playing Dear Abby or whatever, you know.
Dr. Drew, Loveline kind of thing.
right, exactly. Now, when Jimmy Palmiotti talked about it, he did say, now remember, these are respectful questions that we're asking for. It doesn't mean that they can't be funny, but remember, you know, when you talk about the character, Harley does have a PhD. She may be love struck, but she's no dummy. So
she's a psychiatrist before she became Harley Quinn.
Right. So if you ask a ridiculous question, you're not going to like the answer. Something out of effect. My summary of what he said, not his. I don't know the exact quote, but that's basically what he said.
Yeah, and of course, they're going to screen the questions, you know.
Right.
And they can come up, if it's an okay question, they can come up with a funny answer. Those will be the ones we hear, I'm sure.
Exactly.
One of my favorite examples of that was Ozzy Osbourne at one point was doing that type for some magazine. It was a British magazine, and they had people mail in and email in questions, and Ozzy would answer them. My favorite one was the one, because if you're a big Aussie fan, obviously being called Crazy Train, I am, you understand his sense of humor. One of the questions was the guy asked, or woman, I can't remember what she was, that asked him a question about eating before you go to bed because it caused him terrible heartburn, and asked Aussie, had he ever suffered from anything like this? And his answer was something along the lines of, heartburn? Oh, yeah, it's terrible. Fell asleep one night, and I woke up with this terrible burning sensation right in the middle of my chest. I realized I fell asleep with a lit cigarette in my mouth. That's Ozzy's sense of humor. But I could see something along those lines in a Ask Harley type of thing, couldn't you? Something like that.
And in the case of Ozzy, it's like, I believe you, you know?
Yeah, and that's the funny part is you don't know if Ozzy was joking or if that's a true story. So,
but as far as actual TV-style programming, I guess earlier this year or last year, they did the reality show about DCU where they were shows pitched by fans. And so these will be the three that were picked up. One was, and I did take some notes on my tablet while I was listening to this, so I missed some details. One was going to be a comic shop reality show. And of course, my knee-jerk reaction was Kevin Smith already had one, Comic Book Men.
Yeah, which wasn't a bad show. It wasn't great, but wasn't bad.
Yeah, it was basically American Pickers or Pawn Stars.
Pawn Stars, yeah.
Yeah. But there's going to be Cosplay Clash, which was essentially going to be kind of day in the life of cosplayers, you know, going through, which, you know, I'd watch that. And
I would, but I don't think it has a long shelf life. After a while, you're going to have gone through pretty much everything interesting about it, and then you're going to be recycling stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
That's my opinion.
And they did say that the first season was going to center around Wonder Woman, naturally, because, you know, Wonder Woman 1984 will be coming out this year. The one that seemed to intrigue me the most was called Arkham Escape, which it was going to be an escape room themed, I'm assuming, game show, where it's people trying to escape Arkham, and there'll be very Batman or DC style traps that they'll have to make their way out of. And I know Scott Snyder, the writer for Batman, is a consultant on that. So I don't know if any of those intrigued you.
Why does that sound like a strange combination of the old Double Dare on Nickelodeon from when we were kids?
Yeah.
With those Japanese game shows where they, like, the whole point is just to embarrass the contestants with physical challenges.
Right.
Japan is the same country that gave us Ninja Warrior, so remember that, you know?
Right. There's a reason why it's called American Ninja Warrior.
Oh, Iron Chef's another one. They love their game shows in Japan. They're competitive people, you know? But it just seems weird because it's like, having been to Japan during my wrestling career and not understanding what they're saying because I'm just watching the TV in the hotel room, but it does seem that game shows here in America, we are kind of encouraged to be on the side of the contestants and cheer for them, whereas we're meant to laugh at the contestants, the Japanese, because they revel in making fools out of the contestants. So I'm sure they're compensated, obviously, for doing what they do, but just a unique and strange difference between the two cultures. That's something I observe. Then again, I not speaking Japanese, I don't know what was being said, the commentary. But I know the announcers were laughing all the time, so they were laughing at the extent. So I don't know, anyway. Yeah.
The extent of Japanese I know at this point is I know Yokozuna in the WWE when he would say, Soda Sne, he's basically agreeing with whatever it was Mr. Fuji said.
Yeah. Right. you know, Domo Arigato, because you listen to Sticks. So.
Right. Yeah.
But anyway.
The other show that they talked about, and I think this actually had its premiere episode already, but this is the one I'm most interested in just because, you know, being a tabletop gamer to this day, and it's called All-Star Games, and it's celebrities and voice actors playing a DC-inspired role-playing game from the 80s. Now, I do realize this is probably inspired by Critical Role, which has been a huge internet sensation. They had a main stage panel at C2E2, and the main stage is probably, ballpark figure, probably 500, 800 people. So,
right.
You know, pretty decent amount of people that came to that. So I'm sure it's taken from that idea, but that's that type of reality show that you can tweak just a little bit and
make it your own.
Right. You know, because it's specifically a DC-inspired game that they're going to be playing. It's going to be the DC role-playing game from the 80s, and Freddie Prinze Jr. is going to be one of the main players. Your friend Austin Creed, aka Xavier Woods, is going to be in it.
Austin Watson's his real name.
Oh, okay. So
I don't know where you got that other name. That must be another wrestler.
Well, that was his TNA name. So
yes, it was. Well, Consequences Creed. Yeah.
Right. But yeah, and the Creed I know came from his love of Apollo Creed. But anyway.
Actually, it wasn't his love. It was a promoter that suggested it, but I digress. We'll talk about that some other time. Maybe I'll get him on one of our wrestling podcasts and he can discuss how he became Creed, you know, but anyway.
Okay. But anyway, yeah, he's going to be one of the players. I'm assuming this was done while he was laid up with his injury, but the whole idea is they're just going to film these guys playing the game, and then the game master is an actor / voice actor Sam Witwer, who was most recently seen in the previous season of Supergirl as Agent Liberty. You know, he was basically one of the main villains of the last season. One thing that they let slide, of course, goes to C2E2 in Chicago. Sam Witwer was a Chicago guy, so all of the locations that they're going to be going through are either going to be real or inspired by Chicago locations and probably from John Hughes movies, because all John Hughes movies are from Chicago. So
yeah, Winnetka, right?
yeah, exactly. So that's the one that I'm most interested in. I don't know how often it's going to come out, but the last thing that they talked about, they showed the entire season premiere for season 2 of Harley Quinn. And they did make it clear. They asked very politely, but also very professionally, do not talk spoilers. So I'll abide by that. The only thing that I guess I can really say is if you saw the season 1 finale, which basically had an earthquake happen. You might think that there'd be some similarities between that and the Cataclysm storyline from, I want to say it was the mid-90s, maybe. Oh, no, I think it was early 2000s, I want to say.
I think you're right.
Yeah, but for those that don't know, there was a storyline in the Batman comics where an earthquake happened in amongst this contagion and all this other stuff. And essentially, the United States say, okay, Gotham City, you're cut off from the rest of the United States, which my thought is it may have been, and just purely my speculation, but I think it may have been inspired by the belief that there was going to be a giant earthquake in California and like half of California was just going to separate and float off.
Fall in the ocean.
Right, or become its own island or something to that effect.
Clarity's sake, I went to the wiki machine while you were talking there, Seth. Mm-hmm. Publication dates for Cataclysm were January through March of 98.
What I'm getting at is once the story started, it very clearly was his own thing. Now, it may have been inspired by the Cataclysm thing, but you know, Harley Quinn, if you have any real familiarity with the show, it is its own continuity. It's not going to cross over with any other animated series, because if you haven't seen the show, the best way I can relate it is if Deadpool and Ash from Evil Dead had an animated series, in that, you know, there's a lot of innuendo. There are a lot of guys randomly getting their heads chopped off, or I think there's something that's played for comedy where Harley's hyenas just eat both of a guy's arms, where it's like first one and then the other, you know, it's still played for comedy, that type of thing, splatstick. But when you take it in that regard, and you know me, and then some of the listeners I'm sure know by now, me being the lawful good kind of PG-13 wired guy that I am, I still laughed a lot at that episode. So take that for what it's worth. You know, somebody like me is still laughing out loud at it.
Yeah. And when you realize it's not being presented on the serious, you're like, okay, I can get with this.
Right. So I don't know if anything interested you out of those series that we mentioned.
The one, not just because, you know, Austin, my friend's going to be a voice actor in it. It does sound like an interesting concept, the game show type thing. I've only seen like two or three episodes of Harley, even though I have the service, the Harley Quinn, but it's really good. Mm-hmm. So I'm a Batman fan. Obviously, I'll get into it because Harley is definitely a Batman character. Still haven't quite figured out the general population and mainstream fascination with that character.
I haven't either.
I don't think she's a bad villain or antihero. I just think there's better examples out there. You know, we'll start with Punisher and the Joker and then work our way down from antiheroes and villains based on those two. But
yeah,
obviously I'll watch it. There were no announcements about any of the live action, like Doom Patrol, Swamp Thing.
I believe Titans is getting another season. I just don't think they announced what's going to happen. Yeah.
See, I think Swamp Thing's done with. I think it was.
And I think you're right.
If they end it where they ended the scene, I'm fine with that. Of course, it was really cool to see some of the lesser known mystical based Madame Xanadu, you know, Papa Midnight, those characters, Pharaonic Man, which, you know, the Pharaonic Man is part of the way Poison Ivy came about. Jason Woodrue. It was cool to see those characters for the first time. Doom Patrol, I would think, would get another season. They didn't seem like it was, and it was pretty well received from what I understood.
I believe so. And, you know, if I always put it out there, if they want another Arrowverse or if they want something to hype up DC Universe, I'd be interested in see how an Azrael series would go.
That would be, I think, you know, problem with Azrael is which one do you take? My general consensus now is it would not be Jean Vallée. It would be, the one that's presented in the Arkham games, simply because, you know, there's a push for diversity in all of entertainment, and he's an African descended man. He's, you know, he's a black man. So, and I like both of them, quite frankly.
Yeah, Jean-Paul's the only one that I'm familiar with.
Something Washington. I can't remember what his first name is. I'm drawing a blank, and I'm the Batman guy, so I apologize, ladies and gentlemen. But the whole backstory of Azrael being the vengeful arm for the Order of Saint Dumas, and this secret society organization that's been around for millennia, much like the League of Assassins, seems to be a lot of that in the Batman. In fact, the first time you meet Azrael in Arkham City game, that's the first thing Batman, in that awesome Kevin Conroy voice, says, great, another secret organization.
Another thing I got to learn how to take down now.
And he's right, and it's not just Batman. I mean, look at Marvel's the same way. AIM, Hydra. And he's like, we get it. And we all joke about it, but it is true. you need a whole lot of like just nameless red shirts to get beat up by the good guys till they get to the final battle with the main villain. So I think that's why those get created by comic book writers, but I could be wrong.
I think Michael Washington Lane is the name you're looking for.
That's it. Okay. Michael Washington Lane. That's it. And he's a fascinating character. He's a former like Gotham City cop who washes out, and then he gets brainwashed by the Saint Dumas, Order of Saint Dumas, and Batman kind of helps him realize you don't have to be the bad guy when he realizes what the Order wants him to do is kill Bruce and take over his position, much the way Jean Vallée did in the Nightfall storyline. Of course, Azrael would not be as, I don't know what's the word I'm looking for, forgiving, I think, as Bruce is, and that's hard to say with somebody who's as hardcore as Batman, but reminds me of one of my favorite What If storylines from Marvel, where Spider-Man decides to stay, gets the power cosmic and goes off in the universe, and there's a little cell at the end where it talks about, but New York will still have a friendly neighborhood web slinger, but those that commit crime will find him not as nice as the last. And it shows Venom strapping up like three crooks. But
that
anyway,
is pretty good. Yeah.
Yeah. It's kind of the same thing with Batman, and Azrael would be Venom Spider-Man. But anyway, that for those that don't know Batman, they might know Spider-Man.
Yeah, we'll wind up our DC talk here about the DC superhero panel. And probably the biggest news coming out of that is Jay Garrick is going to be coming back into current continuity and going to be in Flash 750. It looks like they're kind of expanding out, kind of like how there's a Spider-Verse in the Marvel Universe right now. It looks like there's going to be a Flash-verse, so to speak.
So is he still going to be the Flash from another Earth, like Earth 2 still? Or
maybe from a previous generation or something like that? Because it definitely looks like this is going to be Jay Garrick as a middle-aged guy. At least,
but is he still going to be sporting the classic Golden Age, you know, Mercury's helmet? I love that costume. Yeah. The blue pants.
Yeah, I think they would take off some people if they strayed away from that bowl on the head, you know, type look.
It is. It's classic. It's Golden Age. Love it.
And I know that they stated outright that we're going to keep Barry Allen a good guy. I haven't been keeping up with DC as much, mainly because they canceled Green Arrow, but that's just me. But Wally West has turned heel. It has something to do with him getting Dr. Manhattan's power or something to that effect.
It's fallout from the Doomsday Clock. I've already given enough spoilers away for that. I don't want to do any more here on the podcast.
Yeah. Yeah. And especially since I've been seeing on the geek pages that I frequent that Wally West is already. So I don't think I'm spoiling anything by right now by saying that's Wally West is a bad guy is a thing. But again, it kind of goes back to that 5G thing. I mean, they're going out of their way saying we're going to keep Barry Allen a good guy, but yet there's these rumors that they're going to kill everybody. So I guess we'll just see what happens.
Well, it's the comics. This is, remember the few years ago, the whole kerfluffle over Steve Rogers saying Hail Hydra, and then we find out in the end it wasn't really Steve. Well, it was Steve Rogers, but he was being mind controlled. Yeah. Yeah. It's comics, folks. It's a long story, long form storytelling. Don't base it on something that happens right now.
The last thing they talked about was the Batman Curse of the White Knight, which I have not read, but that's essentially going to be another element of the Batverse, so to speak, and that the Batman, the White Knight version of Batman, he's actually not a Wayne. He's still connected in some capacity, but he's not an actual member of the Wayne family. So,
well, they could always tie that back to the whole Court of Owls storyline, where we get this idea that Gotham's cursed and it's not just the Cobblepots, but a lot of the other affluent families that helped the Waynes found Gotham have always had it out for Gotham. That's how I would go, but I could be completely off base.
It sounds plausible. So we're going to take another quick break, and when we come back, we're going to wind up this episode here talking Marvel Empire.
Attention all Time Lords and ladies, Geekville Radio presents Examining the Doctor, a weekly look at everybody's favorite Time Lord, the Doctor. Join Mark and Seth as they bring their signature blend of knowledge and humor to favorite and not-so-favorite episodes of Doctor Who. From Hartnell to Capaldi, Examining the Doctor provides episode commentaries for classic and current Doctor Who fans alike. Examining the Doctor, available on iTunes, Stitcher, and at geekvilleradio.com.
All right, we're back. Last segment of the show, we are going to talk Marvel Empire, which is going to be the big 2020 story. You know, the major publishers each year, they have their major crossover story that affects most of the universe. Last year, it was War of the Realms. This year, it's going to be Empire. And the gist of Empire, it's what we kind of known going into this, was the Kree and Skrull have ended their war and they've essentially formed a heel alliance, you know, because neither race in that war was looked at as the good guys or the bad guys. Sure, there were some good characters, you know, Captain Mar-Vell probably being the biggest example, but there were evil Skrulls, there were evil Kree, you know, it was the Hatfields and McCoys, you know, they were just always at war with each other, it seemed.
And when did that change? Because it seems like you're the Marvel guy, so I'm asking you, because it did seem for a while there, maybe I'm thinking 70s and 80s, it was kind of presented more black and white, where the Kree were kind of the good guys and the Skrull were the bad guys. And as I got older, I thought, well, maybe that's because we got Mar-Vell from the Kree and we got the Super Skrull from the Skrull, so it was just easier to do that for people to understand. Because the Skrull, Super Skrull, of course, is a bad guy for the Fantastic Four. Mar-Vell is a major hero, so maybe they didn't want those shades of gray until, as we like to talk about all the time, that anti-hero movement of the late 80s. So when did that change come about in the comics, where they were both kind of presented as not so nice?
Yeah, I think that was kind of more the mid to late 80s, around the time that anti-hero thing rose, because the Skrulls were always the bad guys in Fantastic Four. So,
right, you know. And the Kree were always presented as somewhat heroic, weren't they, up to that point?
Right. At the very least, you know, if you look at it from, like, I don't know, like the Spartans and the Athenians, you know, the Athenians were looked at as the good guys, even though the Spartans won the war.
Right. And then, of course, we haven't talked about them, and they haven't made it into the MCU yet, but there was the Shi'ar Empire, too. And they were more of an X-Men thing, but they were presented as good guys as well, right?
Yeah. And I know they also came into play for whenever they would do crossovers with other publications, that would be like...
Well, the Shi'ar, the one that had the McCrann crystal, which was a pretty powerful relic in the Marvel universe, so I get it.
Mm-hmm. So with Empire, as you'd expect, if we're dealing with warring alien races, it's going to have a strong sci-fi story. A lot of it will take place in space around the... Earth region. It's mainly centered around the Fantastic Four and the Avengers, but there will be X-Men involvement as well. And like we were talking about with the Kree-Skrull War, it's going to be looked at as a spiritual successor or like the sequel to the war, is, you know, the combined races wreaking havoc.
Well, it happens. Star Trek, the Klingons finally made peace with the Federation, right?
Right, absolutely. And I think part of that was really just Gene Roddenberry saying no race is all bad, which, of course, I think is true.
Right, exactly. He spoke pretty true words there.
Right.
As a friend of mine says, no nation or group like that is a monolith to the individual, and no individual is a monolith to whatever group they are part of.
Right. Good way of putting it. They talked about characters that are going to have roles in this. One of them is what's referred to as the Celestial Messiah, who's actually Mantis's son. Mantis, of course, prominent in Guardians of the Galaxy, and Swordsman will be in it as well. And again, talking about before about nobody stays dead in comics, I think I lost count of how many times they've killed Swordsman.
At least four I can think of.
Right. And then a new character, Storm Ranger, which I'm pretty sure Storm Ranger, I think, did I see them tour with Whitesnake in like 1985 or something like that? I don't know.
It sounds like an 80s hair band.
Right. She's going to have her own cosmic title. Storm Ranger, in short, came out of the symbiote storyline last year, I think, with Absolute Carnage. And I think she's a symbiote that bonded and then split from Miss Marvel. Not Captain Marvel, but Miss Marvel, you know, the Kamala Khan.
Right.
But that's really what it looks like. It's going to be Fantastic Four, the Avengers, dealing with the Kree and Skrull, and then we're just going to see ripples of that throughout the rest of the universe. Whereas War of the Realms, I mean, it was everybody was involved in that one.
Obviously, Thor was centric, but it was everybody.
Right.
If you're going to do Kree-Skrull, you have to kind of make Fantastic Four the main heroes, because just from a historical standpoint, that's always been a part of the Fantastic Four dynamic, has been Kree and Skrull.
They dropped some bits and pieces about what's going to happen in some of the other titles. As far as what interested me, naturally being a Thor guy, they're saying that Hammerfall, Mjolnir is going to keep getting heavier and heavier for Thor to pick up, which I would assume means that maybe
he's less and less worthy.
Exactly. Yeah, that's my interpretation. That's really the only tease that they threw out there. They did have artwork depicting Black Panther with a symbiote. I don't know how that would work out.
That has some intriguing possibilities, I think. Mm-hmm. Can you imagine a symbiote bonding to vibranium? Just raw vibranium?
I'm not quite sure how that would work. You know,
but if they did, We're talking an Ultron level of indestructibility, aren't we?
Yeah. Spider-Man, they are going to debut a new villain called Kindred. There is a character called Virus, which in this current news and political environment, I'm not sure about putting a character out there called Virus. But you know, they did stress this is going to be a new character. It's not a revamped existing character. And that character will make his debut on Free Comic Book Day.
Well, they're going to call him, like, so Kraven the Hunter, it's Corona the Virus. I'm sorry, was that too soon? Thank you very much.
Yeah, try the veal.
Try the veal. Tip your waitress.
The other real blurb is with Guardians, they joked about a West Coast Guardians. In other words, it's going to be Guardians versus another form of the Guardians. And they did mention Blackjack O'Hara is going to be back. The main reason I bring that up is because that's who I want Mark Hamill to voice in Guardians of the Galaxy 3 if that character is in Guardians 3, because...
But I think we've all kind of decided that it's going to be the Supreme Intelligence is who he's going to voice,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, it could be. But, I mean, Blackjack O'Hara, for those who don't read the comics, as the name implies, he's a bunny. If Rocket Raccoon had an arch enemy, it would be Blackjack O'Hara, talking bunny, mm-hmm. and you know Mark Hamill would have fun playing an evil bunny.
Now, you talk about a title that has changed drastically to fit in line with what is presented on the MCU. Guardians would be the number one example.
Right.
That particular comic property has changed more to reflect in the comics to reflect what we see on screen than any other thing I can think of from Marvel or DC. You agree with that, I'm sure.
Yeah, I kind of equate it to what happened with the Turtles, where the original incarnation of the Turtles comic was darker. And
black and white.
And then it kind of became more lighthearted and kid-friendly when they expanded out, which I'm not dissing that. I understand why they did it. But that kind of became the interpretation. So naturally, that seemed to be how the characters were changed to accordingly.
I mean, don't you remember the original Peter Quill Star-Lord that wore like that, looked like almost like a cross between Nova and Polaris's headgear and a black shirt? Looked very much like a costume that you would see from a sci-fi character in the 70s Silver Age comics to what now they present looks a lot like what Chris Pratt wears on screen, you know, with it not being a headgear. It's just that face mask and he has a little thing behind his ear and that, you know, and the red leather jacket. It's very much, you know, don't get me wrong, I like the look that they have. And I get that the look that he did have before that, the one, you know, like I said, with the helmet and everything was a little bit cheesy, but it was also fun.
Little Ultraman looking. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I always thought it looked like almost like, to me, the most similar in comic wise was the Nova. It was the helmet that Nova wears. But Nova's helmet, I thought, was his leftover from the Nova Corps, wasn't it?
I think so. But by the way, I triggered my own memory. Marvel is going to be doing an Ultraman limited series. So take that for what it's worth.
Are we ever going to see your boy Rom the Space Knight again? Because I keep hearing rumors every once in a while that he's going to pop back up.
That's a different property. I think IDW has the license for that now because he's been showing.
But Marvel did have it at one time, though, didn't they?
Yes. That's because of the toy. But yeah, he's in the IDW unit, so he's rubbing elbows with like Mask and Transformers and G.I. Joe and all that.
Right,
so
right. Gotcha.
Now, the last thing that I wanted to talk about is the most interesting one. This is one of those things I would not be surprised if this becomes a movie or a TV series or something like that. And that's called Strange Academy. And yes, the name Strange, as it implies, it's magic oriented. It's kind of like what Xavier School is for mutants, but for magic based. My interpretation, my summary is it seemed like it was going to be a Marvel Harry Potter. And it's going to be mainly new characters. I'm sure they'll have known characters drop in. Like, I can't see how you have a title named Strange without Doctor Strange showing up.
Oh, he's got to be the Dumbledore, doesn't he?
I would think so. You know, the principal or whatever.
Headmaster, whatever you want to call it.
Right. So I didn't know if you had any opinion on that, because I know you're kind of more into the magic characters than I am.
I got no problems with it. I mean, for this reason alone, when the Ancient One dies and Stephen Strange becomes a Sorcerer Supreme, which was back in the 60s, we have never, ever had any explanation to what happened to Kamertage. And obviously other magicians and sorcerers have to be being trained. And it seems like Strange is so busy rubbing elbows with other superheroes and protecting the Earth and our reality. They've never shown him doing the same things the Ancient One did, which was training people, you know, and Wong's too busy keeping the Sanctum Sanctorium and Clea's too busy being Clea. Those are your three main heroes in this Doctor Strange stories. Who's teaching these young kids? Which also begs me the question, where do you set up this school? Is it in a pocket dimension? Is it at the Sanctum Sanctorum right there in Greenwich Village? Is it at Karmar Taj, which is in Nepal, in Kathmandu? Where is it, you know?
Right. I don't think they revealed that.
Of course, I'll read it because you know I'm a Strange fan. So
yeah, I'll at least check out the first issue.
Yeah. And then decide from there whether it's Barrett's getting pull box credibility, right?
Right. So that's going to wind up our C2E2 coverage, and we've got it kind of running into another 64-page size annual here. So is there anything you wanted to hear about or talk about in the winding down here about C2E2?
No. I think people just need to remember this is the first in that long line of comic conventions. It'll run, you know, there'll be several other good-sized ones leading to, of course, Comic-Con in San Diego, which would be the biggest. So we're probably going to have, another 4, maybe 5 opportunities for these imprints to make big announcements between now and then.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Now there's going to be a Chicago Comic-Con, and like you said, San Diego Comic-Con. There's probably going to be a few others.
Yeah, and there's one in New York sometime in the early summer, late spring. Of course, Free Comics Day is coming. So there's a lot of chances for them to drop some bombshells on us, I'm sure.
Absolutely. So that's going to wrap up this episode of Geekville Radio. Thanks again for listening. You can find us at geekvilleradio.com. The show notes will be at geekvilleradio.com/256. And the social media is Geekville Radio at Facebook and as well as Twitter. So, Train, if people want to get a hold of you to talk Batman or Denny O'Neill or any of those other comic stuff that we talked about.
Always available on Twitter at crazytrain_JB.
And you, once again, Geekville Radio is on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, wherever you get your favorite or maybe not so favorite podcast, we can be found there. We're kind of an empire in our own right, I guess, with all the places we're available at. But we'll
talk. Small one, but yes, we're trying.
Yeah, but we'll talk to you again next time. Geekville Radio is not sponsored or endorsed by any product or company unless specifically stated. The views expressed by the hosts and or guests are purely their own and do not represent the views of GeekvilleRadio.com, A1-Wrestling.com, or any affiliates. Some media used on Geekville Radio is the respective copyright of its publishers, all rights reserved.